Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Welcome to Sports Talk on a Wednesday, obviously, as we make our way through and do things here, we do things there, and we're delighted that you have decided to join us. Do you want in? All right. Trust me, we're not picky. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. The text line, good stuff already today, 321-0824. Twitter at 953thescore for the station, for the show at SportsTalk 953, for Nick at Rick Nodgers. Some good stuff on this cheating scandal, because as we mentioned, the regular seasons end respectively, and I think all of them end on a Sunday, and then you have the proverbial Black Monday, you know, who's going to get fired, who learns that the interim tag will remain just that. And then you list the job openings and everybody starts handicapping who's going to get what. But if, in fact, the Mets end up parting ways with Carlos Beltran a day after or 2 days after the Red Sox can Alex Cora, a day after the Astros part with A.J. Hinch, I mean, when was the last time three managers or coaches in basketball, hockey, or football all lost their jobs the same week, like almost before the next season began? And here's my answer, never. Somebody wants to know, and this is a very good question, when the steroid era started to kind of take root and become a little more front and center, when you go back to when rumors first started till the Mitchell report, I mean, like one of the texters said, this cheating scandal, is this like the dark days now, or are we going to find out, wow, a lot of people were involved in this? Because the old Lay's potato chip commercial, nobody could eat just one. And if you find that you can gain a technological advantage, especially tipping off pitches, jeez, as dialed in as these guys are with the analytics and trajectory and bat speed and hot zones and cold zones and who hits a curveball on the outer part of the plate, but who could adjust to the fastball. Ay, ay, ay. So the answer to your question is stay tuned, because at this point, well, think about it. You've now just hit 10% of the teams. Now, Beltran wasn't with the Mets, and, you know, we don't know what Cora did while he was with the Bo Sox. We do know that Hinch was with the Astros when they won the World Series. So, wow.
I don't know. I think firing Beltran without, especially because Manfred has said that like no player is going to get punishment here, and then the Mets to just get scared because the other managers are getting fired, but their manager wasn't a manager or a coach during this. He was just a player. But for Manfred to be able to single out Beltran in this and then decide to simply punish him but none of the other players, that doesn't seem very fair, because then it's just going to turn into he said thing where he's just going to say, well, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that and so-and-so did this, and Fires, well, you know, after he left the or when Fires was on the team and he's complaining about our system, he did this when he was with the team and he helped us do that. And it's just like, it's just going to turn into a big dumb argument that nobody wants to have.
Well, I'll tell you what, once guys realize their livelihood's at stake, I don't think there's a mentality among highly paid pro athletes to go down with the ship. It's like, you're firing me. I got some information. You know, it's kind of if you catch a guy making a hit on somebody else, as a rule, they're not after the button man. They want you know, one of the capos or the godfather himself. So they want to find out who's at the top of the pyramid and take him down. And, you know, that's how people wind up like Henry Hill in witness protection. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
The Mets also have to have a sense of
nothing. They're idiots.
Well, that's the thing. Is they do they know that they're idiots?
Does an idiot know if they're an idiot? I seem oblivious.
But are you unoblivious by saying that you're oblivious?
Yeah, I guess
the fact
so.
That you are an idiot. So you're self-aware.
It's the Prince's Bride.
You're fine.
But you didn't know I was a Sicilian.
They were both poison. No, but like the Mets have to have a sense of their own self-image and to realize that they get made fun of enough through the media, through fans, through, you know, Yankees fans in general, of just like, haha, lol Mets. Like, lol Mets is just a thing on the internet that like defined the Mets for the greater part of, you know, since Twitter was a thing. And all they've got to show for it is, you know, a appearance in a World Series, which, okay, sure. But to fire a manager that had not managed a game for your team that you hired to try and take your talented team that had been a step away from, you know, getting back into the playoffs, that should have the pitching talent and the ability to actually contend for a title, and to you to say we need to fire a manager 3 months after we hired him and he didn't manage a game. How does that work? You like,
yeah, unless he committed a documented crime that was viewed, you know, in a heinous manner. The bottom line is, ownership could actually say, look, I don't know what he did with fill in the blank. It's not happening here.
Right.
So conduct your investigation. Do as you please. Until proven otherwise, it's not part of us.
He'd also have to be a gigantic idiot head to start up some
Johnny idiot head?
Yeah.
Idiot face.
Idiot face, sorry. He'd have to be a gigantic idiot face to start up a sign-stealing scheme that he knows kind of works, to follow like, you know, it took him 3 years to figure out they were doing it in Houston, so I've probably got 3 years here. I think we'll be okay. Let me go ahead and start one of those up. That would not be very good.
Although, what if they found out it was happening all around him and he was oblivious to it? And then they're like, well, this guy's an idiot. We can't have him as our manager.
Fired for incompetence.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, more important than all that nonsense about sports and our jobs and our livelihood, when the show ends tonight, I'm going to buzz out of here, meet a buddy downtown. My pal Jim, kind enough to have invited me to see tonight's show at the Hult Center featuring Jerry Seinfeld. I've never seen his stand-up. I've told you the story before. I moved to Eugene in 1990, and I did morning radio for 6 months and was pretty much unaware of the show. I didn't watch a lot of primetime TV. Me in my late 20s, kind of more tend to be out at night partying and gambling and shooting pool and probably doing what I shouldn't have been. And then I started working the 7 to midnight shift, and I went home back to Jersey for Christmas 1990. I bought my first VCR because I had a credit card from Macy's. And I remember thinking about it, cost me $379, and in Jersey back then, plus tax. And I took it back, I checked my luggage, and I took the VCR on the plane with me. And one of my friends who owned the radio station I worked for said, "You need to start watching this TV show." I wasn't even familiar with his stand-up. And, you know, obviously, I think they started midway through the 89 TV season and then 90. So by the time 1991 came around, it started to be a phenomenon. And then fast forward to the 92-93 season, I get a call on the air. So Seinfeld was on maybe 9:30 still at that time after Cheers. And our boss, one of the primary owner, was, "Are you recording Seinfeld tonight?" "Yeah." He's like, "You need to watch it the minute you get home." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Trust me, grab some beers, go home and watch it." And it was the contest. And used to make a tradition out of it. And I'd get off at midnight and I'd meet up with bartenders who were friends of mine around town. And I think about it, you know, I lived alone, and go back to my place, party up, and watch Seinfeld from 12:30 to 1 a.m. And so now for the first time, I'm actually going to get to see the stand-up routine. So, Jerry, if you're out there and they've convinced you to listen to my show, this is the first time, so bring your A game, pal. All right.
Or come on by, please.
Yeah, or give us a call. Yeah. I know you're a big Mets fan. You could probably offer up some insight. Although,
what's the deal with
Beltran?
He's on these partner accounts on Twitter.
I always wonder, well, I guess it made more sense for where they lived in the city, proximity to the South Bronx, as opposed to Queens, even though, you know, went to Queens College, that's where the Costanzas lived. Anybody who knows the area, Queens to get to from Jersey or the city is such a pain in the ass.
Why are they banging on trash cans?
What Nick said. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody, when we were talking about the recognition that you yourself are an idiot, of course, that's a Seinfeld. For I am Costanza, Lord of the Idiots. Oh, come on, I'm a much bigger idiot than you. All right, let's get to the phone lines and head south and east to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good evening, Steve Cannon. I'm in Florida. I want to say, buddy, what is your gut telling you about the Blazers beating the Rockets tonight live on ESPN? Do you think the Blazers can beat the Rocket team tonight?
I admire your loyalty and commitment. I appreciate the call, Steven. Right now, I don't trust the Blazers at all. They're going to Houston. Even though Leroquet played and lost last night, might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I saw ESPN was doing kind of a Timmy Legler breakdown on what Carmelo Anthony has meant to Portland. But, you know, you look at the Rockets, -8.5. By the way, the over-under on that game, wow! I don't know if I've seen a biggest number. 236.5. That always goes over. Uh-oh. I think I might have found my next bet.
I've definitely seen bigger numbers. 500, 600, 700. There's infinitely
I'm talking over-unders.
Oh, right.
For example, the
specifically
Mavs,
for numbers,
the
though,
Mavs and the Kings are playing tonight. A couple of check your defense at the door teams, and they're 225.5. Denver, 208. Indy, Minnesota. Minnesota, who also just, as far as they're concerned, there are 25 letters in the alphabet. The D is just pointless. They're at 218. Wow, Wizards, Bulls, 229. I do think I found my first post-Clemson Natty bet. And it's going to be the over on Portland-Houston. So I told you guys that I had a chance to put 5-10 in the bank if Clemson had won outright. Instead, I'm still up 175, which isn't a lot of money. For me, it's a nice amount to have. It gives me enough to play around with, probably, unless I go nuts through March Madness. But and I don't have a goal. I'm not really a believer like I was in the Rams last year, which turned out to be really intelligent. Although, very similar. Early in the year, I jumped on the Rams. They did make the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, on Clemson in October, I was like, I think they're going to win it all. They did make the college football version of the Super Bowl.
Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
But at least you get action.
Yeah, but if you're gonna go that long and you're gonna keep thinking that your big bet's gonna cash in and then it doesn't,
it's disappointing.
Yeah,
wow. Actually, you want to know the truth? I've been gambling so long, it's not really that disappointing. If you, like I said,
I have not been gambling that long, and every time I would lose a bet, I'd be like, "Oh well, if that team had only scored five more goals, the over would have hit." Duh, it's not that bad.
Trust me.
No,
I could now give you 4 decades of that.
Oh, congratulations.
In a nutshell.
Also, damn you.
The aggravating, you know, for example, if you look at the national championship game from Monday, and if the college football gods came down and said, all right, I'm going to count to three. I'm going to give you 3 plays. The end of the half, the Burrow scramble. Even give him a field goal. You knock off 4 points there. The 3rd and 19 pass interference, one of the dumbest plays of the night. It's almost like a Pac-12 official made the play on defense. All right, we'll take that one off the board. I just took 7 points off the board. And then the 3rd and 10, when they should have known Burrow was still recovering from that whack he took at the end of the half, so they should have been looking for the running back or the bubble screen, which they threw to Chase. You cover that one, there's 18 points. They win the game by one. Put the money in my account. All right? So there. That's what I shouldn't say I did that for 40 years. I did that for probably up until my early 30s, where you convinced yourself you should have won a bet. And then I had the realization, oh, you really don't play to win money unless you're a professional gambler. You play to have the action. And if you happen to win, awesome. That is it. That would be the one bit of advice I would give if I, like, spoke during a panel on gambling and the dangers and the upside. Starring Steve Tannen, $59.99, Venmo me the money. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Bill. Bill, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going well, Steve. How are you today?
All right, what's up?
Hey, I'm heading down to Vegas on Friday, and I need some advice. I'm thinking taking the Packers and the under. What do you think?
Oh, man. I don't know if I would bet against the 49er defense right now. I like your under pick, but yeah, you look at what went right for Green Bay and how they still almost lost that game at home, and now they're going to San Francisco, who's actually got a running game. I don't know. The under I like, I got to tell you right now, I think the Niners are the play.
Okay, so you think they'll beat them by 7+?
Yeah, well, my site has 7.5. And, you know, you always get a little nervous about that half point, especially whether it's 3.5 or 7.5 or 10.5. You just, in your mind, you see a 24-17 final where you get screwed by a half point.
Oh, I know. I'm just you know, I'm a 49er fan. I was just thinking that they might win by less than 7, and I'd be a double winner. But anyway.
Wait, whoa. You're a 49er fan, and you were considered betting against them.
it's called hedging your emotions.
So you hedge your money, not your emotions. All right. Well, hey, either way, have a great time and travel safe. He gone. Didn't we have this conversation the other day about, you know, like, for example, I've bet on the Yankees, the Ducks. I bet over-unders. And I guess technically, when you bet an over-under with your team in the game, there are series where you're like, well, don't score here. Or definitely give up a touchdown here late in the half or late in the game to cover the bet. But I have never bet against Oregon football or basketball. I've never bet against the Yankees. I've never bet against the Giants. I've never bet against the Islanders or Rangers. I've never bet against the Knicks, which, by the way, talk about a way that I could have earned a living for the last quarter century when I had to work for a living. It's just because I've seen one of the most devastating losses I ever saw was a diehard Met fan betting against the Mets because they were in a hole thinking the Mets stunk and the Mets won 2-1 on a late homer. And we were in our early 20s, and let me tell you something. Tears welling up in the eyes. Back in those days, if you weren't a professional person and you worked part-time and the minimum wage back then was about $4.75 an hour, and because you were betting with a bookie, you could get on credit and go from in the hole about $380 to $760. You didn't have the $380. Where the hell were you going to get the $760? And to see the ball fly over the $396 mark in the old Shea Stadium? Yeah. That's a moment you remember forever. That was 1982, I believe. So, yeah, betting against your team is the double misery. That's not hedging. That's begging for misery. Because not only do you lose your bet, and your team loses. I mean, I had a chance to hedge my bet the other night, but I was like, screw that.
But in his case, he would win the bet. Well, assuming he doesn't, you know, parlay with the under and then the over hits and the Packers win and the Packers don't cover or whatever, you know, whatever the case is or that. Yeah, anyways. But in this case, it's like he's saying, I think the Niners are going to win, but I think it's going to be close. And if they do win and even if the Niners cover, well, hey, whatever, the Niners won. I don't even care about the bet. Or if they win close, then, hey, they won and I was right on my bet and I got a little extra cash.
I see that.
I think it makes sense.
Well, that, and also, as a rule, I've mostly bet on my teams when I've been at the game, just for a little something, 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 because I always have an emotional investment to begin with.
As if being at the game to root for and cheer on the team isn't enough. I need more on the line for this moment.
It's like it'll be a pretty passionate time there screaming and yelling. You know, if you're there at a football game with 55,000 fans, you know, basketball game, or when we used to go to the Garden to see the Rangers or the Knicks, you know, 19,500, the roar of the crowd, plus you might win $50, a little extra something. All right. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline is open, 284-8571. Our friends at Beer Garden, as you enter the Wit on West 6th, invite you, starts tomorrow morning, by the way, the 5th annual Brews, Blues, and Chatter Festival. They got the 5 food carts in there that'll create a unique variety of chowder. They'll be hosting blues music and a 100% Oregon Coast beer and cider list will round out this epic event. Tomorrow, they're going to host Yahats Brewing. They'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow and do a tasting. All of the food trucks are going to put together their own chowder. So what happens is you get a passport, and if you try every one, turn in your passport, you're entered to win gift cards for Beer Garden, other really cool prizes. Learn more. BeerGardenMe.com and the Blue Shimmy Band, 7:30 tomorrow night, starts off the music. As always, shows are all ages, no cover charge. So you know about the triumvirate of fabulous pubs. Tap and Growler, 5th and Pearl, downtown Eugene, across the street from the 5th Street Public Market. You've got the Public House Hub on A Street in Springfield. And like I said, this Thursday through Sunday, the big Chowder Festival, Blues and Chowder Festival. Actually, it's a trifecta. It's a Brews, Blues, and Chowder Festival at Beer Garden Online, beergardenme.com. All right, we'll take a break, come back, we'll have an update. By the way, in the 5 o'clock hour, Ryan Thorburn of the Register Guard, I'll be in. He's actually at the press availability with the women's team who take on Stanford in a big one tomorrow night. Plus, obviously, a lot to talk about with what's gone down this week with Duck football. And who better to talk with than Ryan Thorburn? We'll talk to him about 5:10. All right, break time. Back. More sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
Out of Birmingham into the game for Sims now for Clemson. Second three of the game already for Tyson. Sims spinning and hitting. And this foul. And that'll do it. Clemson takes down Duke.
That was a big three from Hunter Tyson and a huge and one. Yes, and it counts. Amir Sims, who led the way for the Clemsonians. 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists as they KO Duke 97. I got a little dyslexic there for a moment. 79-72. Talked on Monday before the Natty that Clemson basketball had beaten North Carolina at Chapel Hill for the first time ever, 59 years. And then last night, the day after the Natty, they beat Duke at home. And it's like, did they use all their good sports karma? Save some for LSU in my bet. God. Bottom line is, I guess we need to start paying attention to Clemson basketball. And, of course, what is on social media the ultimate get off my lawn? I'm thinking when an older person, how would we say that compared to college? Somebody 40 or older starts whining when college kids storm the court after a big win at their gym.
Is this just like the telling sign that just grandpa's been on the Twitter too long and he needs to go home now?
Well, for example, I saw even last night and into this morning, what do they have to act like you won a big game before? Why? You're 18, 19, 21, whatever. You're a college student. You're at a Duke game. You win and it's ESPN. All the big guns are there. It's like, what's wrong with that? That's awesome. Yeah. I'll tell you the honest to God truth. We go there. We cover. I'll tell you what. I'd like to go tomorrow night and just go sit in the pit crew with the students. And if Oregon beats Stanford, lead the charge out onto the court. And not for anything else except to say to all the old people, screw you. We're having fun. That's what we're here for. It's friggin' basketball, man.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I'm really glad that, like, my generation and a lot of younger people as well, of, like, being mad at people who are trying to be fun.
To be happy?
Yeah. Like, just let people enjoy things. You grumpy, old, sad, mean people. Just go away. Let people have fun. You can have your fun being mad, but just go it, do it in that sad corner over there where nobody is. Go be sad over there by yourself and mad and angry and whatever.
Is that an age thing or just a cynical thing or people who take sports too seriously? There are very serious things that happen in sports. There could be social issues. There could be, you know, fundraising and serious injuries and scandals and things we learn about. But when it's actually, this is only about the game. Two teams played. One team won a huge game. The home fans celebrated. Oh, we can't have that.
No, yeah, I think all of that falls into the older sports fan that cares too much, that has to take everything ultra seriously. They can't have any light moments on TV.
Hand the ball to the ref after you score a touchdown. Act like you've been there.
Don't celebrate.
Which, by the way, the person saying that, when did you ever score a touchdown?
Also that. Right. But that person, you know, doesn't like Bill Walton because he's having too much fun and he's giggling. He's not providing any analyst or any analysis of the game from the analyst chair. We can't have that. We can't have people having fun on TV. We can't have people smiling and making jokes. God forbid a woman go on TV and smile and make a joke while doing a basketball or a football game either. No, it's all the same person. You kind of know what that person looks like, and they need to go sit in a corner and be all grumpy by themselves and then go away. We're having fun here, and if you're not going to have fun, go away.
It's college. Think about it. You go to your college. You're a sports fan. You're in the ACC. It's ACC basketball.
It's Duke.
It doesn't get any bigger or better than that. And
they
yeah,
only just beat
just
North
beat
Carolina
Duke.
For the first time. They just beat Duke at home and within 2 weeks.
You know
and
what I like to do?
Not supposed to be excited? Get the hell out of here.
Let's have one basketball game to spite the curmudgeons. And every time the home team hits a three, everybody storms the court. Just the game will last 4 hours, but as everybody storms the court, they're flipping off the old people, the grumposauruses, yeah, and the miserable person. It's like, you ain't stopping us from having fun. Ha ha!
And we're shooting cash confetti cannons, and we've got OBJ,
OBJ
there.
Is
He's
there.
Handing out cash to everybody, too, because nothing pisses off those people than the idea that a college athlete can make some money at the sport that they're playing that's making billions of TV dollars. God forbid they get a $100 bill from a famous
ooh
athlete. Ooh, no. Yeah, let's play that game and then just see how mad people can get. And then as they get more mad, we keep having more fun. Just keep raising the stakes a little bit.
College basketball, fans having fun bothers people who aren't at the game and have never stormed the court. It's just...
Back in my day, we wore a suit and
tie. Did you ever storm the court?
Yeah, my freshman year again, Oregon beat a top 25 ranked Arizona.
Oh, that a boy.
Yeah,
that a boy.
I have a picture of me and my friends from my dorm all in a row. And then right on the end, a random guy that none of us knew and we never saw on campus ever again. It was
just storming the court.
Yeah, well, we were all taking a picture because the craziness had kind of calmed down and we were just like, hey, let's take a picture. We were all throwing the O. And this one guy in the end that we had never seen before, we never saw again, he was in our picture with us.
Was that the early March win? Was it a Sunday maybe? Or
no,
it was Saturday against
it was another early in the Pac-12
okay
season game. I think it was. I just saw the Facebook memory of it a couple weeks ago, so I can't remember the exact date. It was in 2012.
Yeah, especially prior to, you know, 5 years ago when it was still not taken for granted that Oregon was going to be in the tournament. You're at Matthew Knight Arena, Mac Court. You beat Arizona or UCLA. Pour onto the court. Go nuts. No, hold up number one, even though you're 6-7 in conference. I don't care.
Oh, they were a top-ranked team. I think they might have been undefeated.
Well, back then,
at that,
Arizona.
Right. Yeah, they were still Arizona, and it's like, you're going to come in here, and you're going to lose today. Like, that was the mindset of everybody in the pit crew, and as the game was winding down, like, it was Oregon's. I was grabbing my backpack. I was grabbing stuff on the floor. I was looking around, trying to find the angle I was going to go through, and am I going to try and run past, like, the usher? Is the usher going to try and stop us? Do I need to go straight ahead? Like, then I have to run around the people that are in the courtside seats. It was a whole big to-do. It was so fun. It was very fun. It's the best thing ever.
You were in college at a basketball game and have fun.
I know.
Now, we're rescinding your diploma.
Yeah, I'm probably getting a very angry fax sent to me right now.
A tersely worded email. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, well, good. I'm 42 years old, and I don't ever remember a time in my lifetime where people didn't storm the court after a big win. That seems really old and curmudgeon-y to me.
No, it's just that certain people, it's got to be the number one team. It got to mean that you got into the tournament or a buzzer beater, and it's like, how about this? If you're at a game and your team wins and you don't want to storm the court, sit in the chair or leave. This isn't brain surgery.
No, all that has to happen is you have to either have be A, an underdog that beats the better team, or B, be really drunk to storm the court.
Well, if you're the only one running out there, it's probably not that big a win.
Yeah. You know, but I do have to take exception with the whole Bill Walton thing, though. I maybe it makes me only curmudgeon-y, but I can't stand listening to him talk about things that aren't related to the sport. When he goes on tangents, it drives me nuts. So maybe that does make me old and curmudgeon-y with that, but that is just, that's where I draw the line.
Well,
I just,
by the way, I'll put it to you as simply as possible. When I've had Roxy Bernstein on, I ask him about Walton, and he says, no gray. Every single person he hears from either loves him or hates him. So you're on team B, and there's team A, and it's like a 50-50 split.
Well, it's the same thing with Blazer fans. You ask Blazer fans, they either love him because they remember that 1977 championship year thoroughly, and he was the heart and soul of that, or they're like me, and they hate him because he kind of turned his back on the franchise, and he's now parades around like he's more of a Celtic than he ever was a Blazer. So,
although
I think I'm with him in a lot of ways.
I see that. All right. Thanks a lot, Josh. Walton did last year. He responded to me on Twitter because on air he mentioned he was part of three of the most unique championship teams ever, but he didn't follow up. And I was like, 72 UCLA, 77 Blazers, 86 Celtics. And he tweeted back at me, yeah, that's what I meant. Because they were really unified. And remember, the 77 Blazers were only a 49-win team. They just came together. It was like a perfect storm. There was a good team out of the East in Philly who had just come together. Remember, the year before, the ABA had folded, and Dr. J had just joined them with George McGinnis. They, you know, the Lakers had slipped big time from the teams from the Chamberlain, West, Baylor, Gail Goodrich 70s teams. So it all really kind of fell into place perfectly. And, you know, I should start doing this. The texts that we get about Walton, and just do a survey, because it's going to go to the judges. It's going to be really close. Nobody's getting a knockout. The Walton haters and the Walton lovers, y'all stand by him or y'all pounce on him with the consistency of Roger Federer.
I like Walton. I think it's because I don't like basketball that much, and he's just like a fun person to listen to because he will give basketball analysis when he finds something that's super interesting. Like in the Arizona game, I think it was Arizona couldn't stop. I think it was Duarte. And it's like, does nobody on Arizona realize that Duarte has been, will be, and forever will be left-handed, and he was going to drive to the left? And Dave Pasch is kind of like, well, I think he's going to be left-handed outside of basketball as well. Duarte shooting too. It's just like, that's a perfect good basketball moment. You get a little fun, you get a little weird, and then you have Dave Pasch who's like, I can't lose my job. I have to kind of give the score and the scorer, and if I do that, everything's fine. It's all fine.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, maybe our first convert. Somebody said they used to hate Walton, now they love him. Also got a text, Walton makes watching a game not fun.
But they're still not in the middle, is the thing. You can switch sides, but you never go, okay.
You can
flip back and forth, but it's just constantly yes or no.
My wife makes audible groans. It's one of the few times where I'm just like, you know, if I watch the whole game, I'll do one half in the other room. just because I love my wife. All right, let's before we go to break, yeah. We know what Wednesday is around here at this time because we are dog lovers. It is my conversation with Sarah of Green Hill on 95.3 The Score. All right, folks, it's Wednesday, and of course that means it's Yay Day in studio, and Sarah from Green Hill is here. How you doing?
Doing all right. Got a little bit of a chest cold, so I feel a little like deep, voice deep, but I'm doing all right.
All right, good to hear, and I have somebody kind of nipping at the back of my calves here. this is just a really gorgeous doggy.
Yes.
I didn't even check with you, boy, girl, name, whatever. You just walked in. We got right to it. We got?
Yeah, we've got Shorty today. Shorty is a 10-month-old pity Dalmatian mix? Because he's just this gorgeous little all-white dog who's got, you know, the spots all over and spots on his ear and over his eyes. So he's just really handsome, very curious, high energy.
How old again?
10 months.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So very high energy, you know, puppy energy. He is, you know, at this point, because he's still relatively young, he can pretty much go home with just about anybody because they're still going to be needing that amount of training
sure.
for just about anything. So, of course, bring your dog in. If you have existing dogs, have them meet. Make sure that they jive. He has lived with a female dog or a male dog before. So, yeah.
Best to test.
Best to test, exactly.
We always come up with catchphrases that everybody could remember.
I like that.
And obviously, it's best you bring down one doggy at a time that mm-hmm. we kind of focus on.
Yeah.
But occasionally, you have another doggy at the shelter you want to talk about, get the word out about, mm-hmm. and, you know, what we do here and
yeah.
try and find a forever home. So what could you tell us about Molly?
Molly, yeah, you got it. Molly is a pity mix, and she's probably in the round of 60 to 65 pounds, so she's kind of larger. She, once you get to know her, once she gets to know you, she's very loving and very attentive and loves tennis balls and loves to go on walks and runs. She doesn't really get along with other dogs at the moment because just of where she's at right now in mental space, she's just really stressed. But when she's out in her own environment and comfortable, she's a wonderful dog. And we aren't able to bring her in for various reasons. So we just wanted to give her a little bit of a shout out because she's a great dog and make sure that she gets some attention.
Is she listening?
Maybe.
A big Sports Talk and Crunch
maybe.
Time fan.
Maybe.
I think she's a duck fan.
Yeah, maybe so. I think you're
maybe
right.
More of a bulldog fan.
There you go.
And I didn't get how old was Molly?
I believe she's around the 5 or 6.
Oh,
so
okay.
She's, you know, middle-aged.
All right. As always, like we say, adopt, give a pet their forever home, not just doggies, although that's our focus quite often. And again, the entirety of the process for somebody who's driving around thinking,
yeah.
All right, I'm sold. What do I need to know?
Yeah, super simple. You come over to Green Hill, and we're over in West Eugene off of Green Hill Road, and we're open 7 days a week, 11 to 6 p.m. You come on in and you talk with, we now have what we call kennel concierge. So that's essentially one of our volunteers. You talk with them, and then they give you the information that you might need. Then you meet with the kennel staff. They have you fill out some paperwork, and it's just one page, and then you meet the dog.
It's an efficient process and leads to happy, happy, joy,
it does.
Joy.
Yes.
All right, Sarah, always my pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And there you go, another yay day in the studio. Remember, learn more online, green-hill.org, or on Twitter, @GreenHillHumane. Take a break, back, more Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Significant increases in guaranteed cash compensation, and we're really proud of that. You know, near and dear to my heart is the health and wellness and offering significantly progressive and augmented benefits, particularly in the areas of child care, maternity leave, family planning benefits. So we're really excited to have a very, what I'm calling, multidimensional agreement.
That was the new WNBA commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, on the new collective bargaining agreement that was reached between the league and the union, which was pretty cool. You know, the difference between money in NBA and WNBA, I mean, there's a Milky Way still in between. But you're talking about noticeable increases in salary, other cash compensations. The league's highest paid player will now make more than $200,000, $215,000 from the $117,500. And with other benefits, the league's best players, league's top paid players, can earn cash compensation that will exceed $500,000. The agreement goes from 2020 through 2027. There is a mutual opt-out after 6 years. The salary cap right now is $1 million. It'll go up next year to $1.3 million. You know, $300,000, that's, you know, do the math, a 30% increase. There are clauses where you could become unrestricted free agents. What they call is what we would say a franchise tag player. They're tagged as a core player, and the number of times a player can be tagged goes from 4 to 3, and after 2022 down to 2. And Players on maternity leave receive full salary with an annual child care stipend of $5,000 and a guarantee of two-bedroom apartments, players with children. So it's the fifth CBA in the history of the league, which launched back in 1997, and the last one with 2014. And players are happy about it. One of the problems is the highest paid players in the league when the season ended. Sometimes, I mean, you know, to most of us, if you made 117 grand, it would be like, well, during the offseason, I'm going to lounge around my pool. But, you know, when you're a high level athlete, 117 grand, they would take off and go work elsewhere, play in international leagues. But now, maybe for an extra 100 large. I'll tell you what, if you're Satu Sabali and Ruthie Hebert and Sabrina Ionescu and you're hearing this and it's like, well, that's very good news. I mean, that's an extra 100. I mean, Sabrina's going to absolutely be the one pick when Satu. I don't know where Ruthie will be. I'd imagine around, somebody said around 10th maybe. With Satu, obviously, with her skill set, when she comes out, she'll be top five. If she comes out next year, wouldn't be surprised if she was, you know, one, two, or three. So it's great to see some progress made on this front. And, you know, depending on attendance and, like they said, other factors, you know, there's a lot more money. Hey, when you're talking about comparing it to NBA players, obviously it's a drop in the bucket. But when you compare it to what they were making and it doubles, I mean, now you're talking. I'll tell you what, if somebody came in here and said, you know, you're not going to get Howard Stern money, but we're going to double your salary. I was like, I don't give a crap what you're paying Stern. I'm in. So
I'll take twice as much.
Yeah, I'm totally, just in case it ever comes up, just assume my answer is yes. All right, looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour, talk with Ryan Thorburn of the Register Guard. Obviously, the fine beat writer covering football and women's basketball. We've got many, 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 many things to chat about from Joe Moorhead. What is he hearing? Is he the new OC? To the quartet of defenders that will return from their senior year, to tomorrow's biggie against Stanford, all coming up next. 95.3 at the score.
I'm not going to be here.